You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Friday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast.
As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, throwing a changeup with the voices at you to start this off. My girlfriend wanted to help with the intro today. As always, I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today, big jam-packed one. We got two great teams coming at the Pacers this weekend with the Rockets tonight and the Bucks tomorrow. I wanted to get guys on to help me cover both of those teams because I think they're both great teams that deserve to be covered. So first up will be Ben DuBose, who used to do Locked On Rockets, now writes for the USA Today site that covers the Rockets. And then Brian Sampson, who I've had on before. He is Bucks Film Room on Twitter. He'll talk Bucks. But first, I want to talk about something that happened this week. Victor Oladipo, I can't believe Adam skipped over this. For 2 days, Victor Oladipo doing a full court 5-on-5 for the first time. Huge news. This is the first time that we've heard anything like that. Since his injury, he'd been doing half court every other day, and no one really had gotten any farther than that. Now he's doing that was his first full court run, and it was with the Mad Ants for practice. I don't know how close he is to returning or anything like that, but that is another, of course, huge step that he can do. Full scrimmages like that. We'll see how often that happens going forward, although I imagine, you know, those questions will pop up. The Pacers played a game that night against the Thunder. They had no practice the following day. So I'm assuming you guys will know and have heard how often that is by now, but if not, I'm assuming we'll hear in the coming days. A lot of people were confused about why, you know, the Pacers made this giant announcement about, oh, Victor Oladipo is being sent to the Mad Ants, and some people were confused thinking he might play a game for the team, just for some context on that. Just, I'm assuming, and I'm almost positive this is the case, that this has kind of been the plan for a long time for him to practice with the Mad Ants this day, because the Mad Ants practiced in Indy. They weren't in Fort Wayne. And then during the game, some of you saw the team got, you know, announced, and look, here's the Mad Ants. It was like Mad Ants night at the Thunder game. So because they were in Indy, it was an easy practice for him to go to because the team wasn't practicing because they had a game that day. So I'm assuming it was already scheduled and it just worked out. But you can't just transfer a guy to Fort Wayne or back. You know, you see the Pacers all the time tweet like, we have transferred whatever player to Fort Wayne, like TJ Leaf or Aaron Holiday last year or Edmund Sumner or whoever. They have to do that. It's part of the process of transferring players. There has to be an announcement and you have to go through the procedure. So to make Vic go through that practice and have his first full court experience and his and all that, they had to make this announcement, which makes it look like he might play a game for the Mad Ants. He's not. He's already back with the Pacers. He was just there for one day to get in that full court practice, to be with the Mad Ants. It's the perfect time for him to do that. Low pressure environment, low media environment. So that's why that happened. That's why that whole process went down. But it doesn't mean anything that he went to the Mad Ants. It just is another step in the recovery process that he is now scrimmaging full court with some level of frequency. So I just wanted to clear that up because there was some level of confusion. So now let's jump into the fun stuff for tonight. We got Rockets, we got Bucks. So stick around and let's talk some Rockets first. All right, first up in our game previews for today is the Rockets, who the Pacers played tonight. A lot of fun Rockets stuff. They got some good players. They got some indie guys. Helping me to talk Rockets is a man who's probably dealing with some baseball controversy right now. Ben DuBose used to host Locked On Rockets, does the Rockets USA Today site. Ben, how are you holding up in Astroland right now before we talk basketball?
Pretty good. As we are recording this, I'm actually watching the MVP breakdown on MLB Network, hoping that, you know, if Bregman can win MVP, that might be a storyline that's not about sign stealing to kind of distract people for a day or so. So we'll see if he gets it. But yeah, it's one of those things. Just every day there's a new storyline. There's a new component to it. And at this point, everybody's just a little bit fatigued, especially because they lost the World Series. You know, I might have more energy to deal with this had they just had a parade, you know. Yeah. But since they since they lost in Game 7, didn't have the parade, and now there's, you know, this wave of stuff that honestly is tough to say much about in our position. I just feel I'm over it and happy that the Rockets are playing better and giving us some actual real sports to discuss rather than this off-field drama.
Yes, they are. 5 in a row for the Mighty Rockets, as James Harden has decided that he's going to be James Harden again.
Yeah, that helps.
Just ridiculous offensive outputs from him, including last night, recording this Thursday against the Clippers. That was a fun game. I got to catch some of that. So obviously, when you talk about the Rockets, you start with James Harden, best offensive player in basketball. So in this five-game renaissance, is he just playing like he was last year, or is he just through the adjustment with Russ? What's going on to make him over 38 points a game again?
It's basically the unguardable tour, which was what they dubbed it here in Houston when he did that 32-game run of 30-plus points. It feels like we're right back into that. And honestly, you know, what's remarkable is that it doesn't really feel that different from the first six games when they started 3-3. He was still pretty crisp. Now, I will say, I think his conditioning has gotten better. You know, defensively, he was a part of their struggles. You know, the way the Rockets season has gone, they started 3-3 through six games, and the last one was just this complete embarrassment in Miami. They were down like 40 points midway through the second quarter. And in those six games, they had the league's 29th rated defense in net rating. And the last five, which they've won all, they've gone from number 29 in the league defensively to number one in the last five. And so Harden's turnaround, and I think some of it's fitness, and maybe that has something to do with his offense as well. But honestly, the biggest change, it felt like from the start of the year, he was still a very good player. You know, even James Harden with his B or C game is still going to be better than 90% of players in the NBA. He just couldn't hit threes. And now he's hitting threes, and, you know, you combine it with everything else in terms of his ability to drive, his IQ, obviously his controversial foul drawing prowess. I think that's a nice way to call it for your audience.
I'm all about it, man. If you can draw a foul every possession,
right.
You'll draw a foul.
Well, I am. Yeah, there's just a lot of guys on NBA Twitter that, you know, are not fans, and to each their own. You know, I understand aesthetics, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder. But at this point, it feels like he's right back where he was last year, perhaps even better. You know, I mean, if he plays like this, I mean, it might even be possible to average close to 40 points a game, as astounding as that is. The only fly in the ointment is that, you know, they're still trying to find the right balance between Harden and Westbrook. In October, when Harden got off to that slow start that I was talking about, Westbrook was averaging over like 10 assists per game. He had a couple of big breakout games scoring-wise. He wasn't a great three-point shooter, but he was, I think, 31, 32% in November, which is when they've had this winning streak going on. He's shooting just 18% from three. His assists per game are below five. And so it's sort of like, you know, if Harden's in rhythm, then Westbrook, you know, to his credit, he seems to at least have the awareness not to force it, you know, because Westbrook forcing up an awkward jump shot is a worse result than almost anything that Harden can do if Harden has it rolling and Westbrook isn't. But I think that's sort of what they're still trying to find, is getting Harden and Russ going at the same time, because this, you know, this incredible surge from Harden, and it's enough for them to win games in the interim. It's largely come at the expense of Westbrook not really getting, you know, the shot attempts or the touches to, I think, kind of sort his way out of this slump. So that's sort of what they're trying to kind of feel their way out of. Harden has it going right now, but at the same time, Westbrook absolutely does not. It hasn't cost them in the win-loss column, because that's just how great Harden has been. But over the long haul, I think they're still trying to find how to optimize, you know, Harden at this level of efficiency, and then get back to what they had earlier in the year with Russell Westbrook.
Man, I don't even have to ask about the pairing. You were all over it there. It's so funny with Russ, because I look at 28, 8, and 7, and I'm like, oh, that's disappointing for him, you know. Just given what he's shown us the last whatever, however many seasons in OKC when he was the guy. It's
right.
Crazy that those stats are disappointing to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like I said, I give him a lot of credit for the self-awareness. You know, he's passed some of the, you know, initial questions already, which throughout the summer, it was, who's going to be the guy to sacrifice? And it's not even close. It's Westbrook. And the reason for that, of course, is that Harden is just a better player. And to this point, you know, Westbrook has said nothing in terms of complaining about his touches. And of course, it helps that they're winning games now. I mean, you'd be an idiot to complain when you're on a five-game winning streak. You just beat the Clippers with Kawhi, all that type of stuff. But to this point, I haven't seen anything that indicates, you know, that he's unhappy. And so, you know, that's step one, being in the right frame of mind. However, beyond that, yeah, you know, I'm sure on a personal level, he's a little bit disappointed. And, you know, for a volume shooter like that, the easiest way to kind of get your way out of a funk is to put up shots. And the problem is, you know, if he goes through a period in which he misses two or three, then you kind of know in the back of your mind, okay, you know, I might can get myself going, but this is, you know, a shot that I'm taking away from James Harden. And that's obviously not in the interest of the team. So, you know, that's more of the long range thing that they need to figure out. I think ideally the way to do that is, you know, kind of let him lead the bench units, which they've been trying to do when Harden isn't in the game, and then maybe have him in more rhythm. The problem last night against the Clippers was that he had four fouls in the first quarter, just way too aggressive. And of course, because of that, he was done for the half. And then in the second half, they were blowing the lead. And so long story short, there basically were no Westbrook-only led bench units in that game. But that's kind of, I think, what the ticket is to eventually getting him going, because I think, you know, he'd like to be closer to the guy that he was in October. He was averaging close to like 25 and 10 to start the year, the first five or six games. But right now, you know, Harden is having his crazy run and Russ doesn't want to detract from that. And so, you know, he's kind of content by and large to sit back and watch the show and, you know, at some point, of course, to be at the best version of themselves, Russ is going to have to, you know, have his breakthrough. And, you know, it might need to happen this weekend, considering, you know, they have a back-to-back, the Pacers, the Timberwolves. These are two good teams. The Rockets are not going to have Clint Capella. So this might be a type of setting where Westbrook has to start figuring it out if they're going to have a shot to win these games.
You're on fire with the transitions with the Capella there. But I was going to say, yeah, what a good problem to have, right? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Russ isn't playing very well. I'll just give it to James Harden.
And right,
it's been working, including through the Clippers game. I'm going to do my own transition anyway, even though you did it. Even
there
through the Clippers game. And in that game, a Rockets player that we just said for the first time, Clint Capella got hurt. And Clint Capella, Miles Turner is always an interesting matchup. And now neither of those guys are playing.
Right.
So that sucks. But is this the only game he's going to miss? First of all, it's just...
It's to be determined. It sounds like probably two. They're saying out for Friday, doubtful for Saturday. Okay. I think that's because it's a back-to-back, and yep, it's a split back-to-back. They go to Minnesota, so it's one of those, you know, they get in at like 3 a.m., something like that, and that's probably not the setting to bring in somebody. You know, unfortunately, we know what the typical timetable is like with regards to the concussion protocol, which is what it looks like that.
Yeah, not to stomp on you here, but Goga Bitadze has been
yep,
in the concussion.
That's what I was going to say. Yep, you've got
over a week.
Yep, the Pacers have one of theirs. So yeah, you're looking at somewhere 7 to 10 days. So I'd be surprised if he's back 3 days later.
Right.
Even if it's mild or somehow isn't a concussion, they err on the side of caution with those types of things. And he got, you know, it was unintentional, but Jermichael Green's forearm right to his dome. So it did not look good when it happened. And, you know, it's going to be something that's really going to test them, because these last three games, he's had 20 rebounds in each of them.
Holy cow.
And I looked it up. The last Rocket to do that was Moses Malone back in 1982.
Some nobody.
Yeah. So it's been a really long time. And, you know, that's kind of been the story of their turnaround defensively, is that they've been playing Capella, you know, to start the year. And then he ended up kind of confessing he played offseason ball with the Switzerland national team, and he ended up kind of banging up his shoulder. But he had a bad playoff run against the Warriors. He did not play very well. And so I think combination of the injuries, some trust issues there. The first six games of the year, he's only playing about 25 minutes per game. And outside of Capella, they're really, you know, they don't really have another presence. They're all either kind of older, small, those types of things. And it kind of took a hit to their defense. Well, now that they've kind of turned it around, talked about the top-rated defense over the past five games, although outside of the Clippers, the schedule has been very weak. Capella has been playing about 35 minutes per game. And of course, rebounding the last three, like 20 rebounds per game. And so he's been a huge factor. He's also had a lot of blocked shots in there. So lose Capella. I do think they've made some other strides. You know, I mentioned, I think Harden in particular has gotten a lot better compared to how he started the year. I think he's starting to get more in shape. But no Capella, also no Daniel House, who's their most, you know, 3-and-D type on the wing. He's doubtful for tomorrow. So between those two, it's going to be a challenge for them defensively. You know, offensively, assuming Harden and Westbrook play, they're always going to be fine. But defensively, you know, no Capella, probably no House. You're starting Tyson Chandler. You know, the one small benefit for Houston, Chandler has actually graded out extremely well in the limited minutes that he's played, but he's 37 years old. He's in his 19th NBA year season. How far can you stretch Tyson Chandler out? That's the big question. And if the answer is not very far, then you're probably going to have to, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, some young prospect that's completely unproven, or see if you can have a, you know, just off Ryan Anderson, have a renaissance game, something like that. But yeah, you know, option A for the Rockets is Tyson Chandler. He's looked good this year, but obvious age and mileage considerations there. So we'll see how long he can go. And if it's not very long, then it gets real tricky in a hurry for the Rockets against the Pacers Friday night.
Yeah, Capella being out, like, obviously the Rockets have James Harden, the best offensive player in basketball. Capella being out, I think, elevates the Pacers' chance as much as any non-James Harden player on the Rockets, because Sabonis is excellent on the glass and excellent inside. And now he's hardly going to have to battle for rebounds. I mean, Chandler's a big body and can kind of do it, but like, he's playing 8 minutes a game for a reason. He is old and slow. Sabonis is nimble and quick. I think he's going to be able to have a big game in this one now with Capella out. He could put up some numbers. Now, that doesn't help stop James Harden or Russell Westbrook or whoever, but I thought when I saw that Capella thing, I immediately said, oh, it's a Sabonis now.
Yep, it's a big break for Sabonis, absolutely, and especially because you don't have House either, so you have a 6'5". Yeah, you have a 6'5", although Gordon's been, you know, it's funny. So,
hey, I'm getting no Indianapolis native slander on this podcast.
I know. Well, he's a big part of their formula, like big picture, like they need to get Eric Gordon back to the guy he was. He was very good in the playoffs last year. And if you get him back to that, then he's a big part of their, you know, championship contending formula. But to this point in the year, like, he's been dreadful. So it's one of those things, you know, he's out, you know, he had a arthroscopic surgery on his knee. Like, it is a hit from the standpoint of overall depth, and then long term, they need to get him right, and hopefully this procedure does that. But in the short term, and I think it's because he was playing hurt, he was so bad that it's actually probably a slight positive compared to like the 9 games that he did play, because he was so bad. But yeah, like in this game, because you also don't have House, who's like your 6'6" springy 3-and-D guy, you're starting a 6'3" Ben McLemore. You have a 6'5" PJ Tucker at power forward, who's a very good defender, but he's not much of a rebounder. So yeah, between Chandler, Ben McLemore and Tyson, between Chandler, PJ Tucker, and Ben McLemore, that's a very small and not especially athletic or springy front line. So yeah, I think it's a big game potentially for Sabonis, and it's one where, you know, I talked about Westbrook's inefficiency and that he hasn't shot that well. You know, the one hope for Houston, Westbrook did get better last year as a shooter as the season moved along with the Thunder. Hopefully it happens again. But the one value that Westbrook has provided the Rockets, they were a poor rebounding team last year. We know Westbrook, because of the triple doubles, he's been a double-digit rebounding guy for 3 seasons straight. They're really going to need that against the Pacers, because they just don't have the size or the athleticism. It's a game where if Houston's going to win, I don't see a formula that doesn't have Russell Westbrook getting at least 10 boards. And it can't be, you know, the Russell Westbrook, the stereotype where he gets 10 boards because his center is backing off and letting him get the rebound. You know, he has to actually get in there and try and outleap the trees to get a few of those. That's the only way I can see Houston hanging around, given the personnel deficiencies, assuming the House doesn't play as well.
It's going to be some interesting cross matchups, right? I'm guessing they'll go Tucker on TJ Warren and then put McLemore on Jakar Sampson. Because for everything I love about Jakar Sampson, his offense is not very good. And then obviously they'll put Tyson on Sabonis. But after that, so the Rockets bench without Eric Gordon. Am I looking at this right? With Austin Rivers, who, by the way, hilarious that he tried to give his
amazing
technical. Absolutely hilarious what he did in that game. Austin Rivers, Seth Alosha, who I really wanted the Pacers to go get. Chris Clemens, who is fun and really small, right?
Yeah, 5'9".
And that's it? Ryan Anderson, maybe? That's it, right?
Yeah, that's about it. Austin Rivers, yeah, I know. Austin Rivers may as well be a starter. You know, he'll play 35 minutes just like he did against the Clippers. And, you know, he's a very good defender. For the most part this year, he shot threes well, although he did not against the Clippers. But, yeah, that's where House and Gordon, their absence, really, you know, that's where it really hits you, because it's not just a matter of, you know, House, Gordon, Capella, you know, you lose these guys, you know, two of them are starters and the other is your sixth man. It's also that, you know, the guys you put into the starting lineup to replace, you know, Gordon, House, and Capella, well, then the bench, you have to replace those guys that are, you know, now suddenly starters, like Ben McLemore and like Tyson Chandler. So yeah, it's going to be slim pickings. Now, you know, they do have a couple of G League prospects, you know, the Hartenstein, Gary Clark, who a year ago at various times,
he's good, right? I forgot about him.
Yeah, well, he was, and then he's tailed off his last season, moved along. There's some guys on Twitter that would love for him to get more time.
I've seen that account, actually.
Yep, there's a Play Gary Clark account, yep, and he might get the chance tomorrow. You know, some of it's just, you know, it's a veteran-laden team, and you know, there's championship expectations, and this is just, it's a very hard situation for Mike D'Antoni to, you know, kind of trust an unproven guy, especially because, you know, the story of the Rockets last year, they got off to this terrible start considering their expectations. They're constantly trying to dig themselves out. Well, this is a situation between those injuries, you know, you just don't have a choice but to trust some of those guys. It's basically just, to me, it's a crapshoot. So yeah, you know, on paper, it's definitely, you know, the depth, it's an advantage for the Pacers. And, you know, if you're the Rockets, you know, you're going to have to trust at least one of Hartenstein or Clark and, you know, roll the dice. And hopefully one of those guys at various points, they've flashed potential. In theory, the game is in Houston, and that's more, you know, kind of friendly in terms of a young player having a breakout game. But yeah, I mean, on paper, big advantage bench Indiana, and Houston's just going to be rolling the dice and hoping that, you know, one of these young guys, mentioned the two bigger ones, also Chris Clemens in the backcourt, just hoping that one of your young guys, you know, gets hot in his own gym.
Yeah, I like all that too. I think you'll just see big minutes from the Rocket starters, right? Like, that's just the best way to get around the day.
Yeah, sure. Except for the fact they do have that game Saturday in Minnesota. So you'll big
Pacers
minutes.
Pacers on a back-to-back too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, I did not realize that.
They're on game one of a back-to-back.
But okay. So yeah, so both teams will be fresh tomorrow.
Yes.
But you have to worry about the back end as well. So yeah, that's why, you know, I think the starters will play a lot, but I don't think you'll see anything crazy like Harden Westbrook going 40 plus, you know. Right. I think a lot will mean somewhere in like the 36 range.
So these injuries gave the Pacers a chance, but I think you'll agree with me that I think the Rockets have a good shot of winning this one.
good, but honestly,
I like the hesitation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say it's pretty close to 50-50. Like,
wow.
I think it's close to 50-50. Without Capella, if you have not watched the Rockets during this winning streak, well, number one, it's been weaker competition. And number two, it's been so dependent on his rim protection and rebounding. And, you know, we didn't get very much of a chance to see last night how they would look without Capella, because he left with just like 3 minutes and something left in the game. So, you know, to me, the Pacers have a pretty decided depth advantage here. And definitely, I don't like Tyson Chandler picking up Sabonis. So, you know, on paper, I think it's close to 50-50. But the reason I would go, you know, Rockets 55-60%, I don't know what the exact number is, you know, because if it's close, then James Harden playing at home. That's just the, you know,
it's playing, just, period.
Well, yeah, definitely. But, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, I think the formula for the Rockets is just find a way, you know, to make enough shots, keep it competitive, and then hope that, you know, in the final 5-6 minutes of the game that, you know, Harden is the type of guy that can take over in a way that, you know, the Pacers roster has a lot of very good players, but certainly you don't have the guy that just strikes fear in the heart, especially late in close games like the Rockets do with Harden. So to me, that's kind of the formula. That's why you give the Rockets a slight edge. Overall, Pacers definitely a deeper roster, and the Rockets have a ton of injuries. But if it's close, you have to like, especially in Houston, the ability of James Harden to kind of take over the game in the final 5 or 6 minutes should the Rockets need it.
Yeah, Brogdon apparently psyched about the opportunity to pick up Harden this weekend, but we'll see how it goes. I don't think anybody's really had an easy time shutting him down this season, so we'll see. Ben, man, I appreciate you coming on.
No problem. Anytime. I can't remember when the rematch is in Indiana. I don't think it's that soon.
It's not that soon.
No.
March.
Yeah, okay, so it's a ways away, but I'll be happy to be back on then. We'll talk about it. But, yeah, it'll be a fun game. And, by the way, I don't know how much Indiana will carry over, but Brogdon was a part of that scheme in Milwaukee last year. And, of course, it helped they had all that length. But, you know, if you look on YouTube, the Bucks, they did some crazy things to Harden defensively in terms of shading him right, getting behind him, just some of the most unique defensive tactical moves that I've seen against Harden. So I don't know how much of that was just, you know, the overall Bucks philosophy and coaching and how much of it was Brogdon, but just kind of keep your eyes peeled because Brogdon was definitely a part of that last year. And, you know, he's a good defender in his own right, but they did some pretty funky things the way the Bucks guarded James Harden. So we'll see if Indiana tries anything creative like that tomorrow night.
That'd be fantastic. They need all the help they can get to shut down him on this tear right now. Ben is on Twitter at Ben Dubose, all one word. That's D-U-B-O-S-E to follow him. And he'll have 7 million great articles a day about the Rockets on their USA Today site. I'm obviously at T-East NBA, except I'm telling you too early because the show's not over. We got a Bucks segment coming up. But don't forget to check out the lovely people at MyBookie at MyBookie.ag. Use the code LOCKEDONNBA when you go there. Now let's take a smaller break, and we'll come back and talk some Bucks.
All right, I'm here now with Tony East, who covers the Indiana Pacers for Forbes Sports, the Fieldhouse, and Locked On Pacers. You can find him on Twitter at TEastNBA. Tony, we're kind of combining this podcast here so we can both get our Pacers and our Bucks stuff in. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. It's getting cold here, and so basketball is the only thing keeping me warm. Rockets Clippers is on. It's a good night for hoops.
For sure. It's definitely cold here in Wisconsin as well.
Oh, yeah.
We've had snow and everything.
I just talked to David Brandon, who covers the Thunder, and I was telling him how cold it was because Oklahoma is warmer and I could get sympathy, but I can get no sympathy from a Milwaukee person about the weather.
No, it's actually where I'm at. It's snowing right now, too.
Oh,
so
geez.
I feel your pain. All right. So, yeah, we wanted to talk about the Bucks and the Pacers. They have their first matchup on Saturday night. And, of course, you know, especially from a Bucks perspective, the return of Malcolm Brogdon, even though the game is in Indiana, it's still Malcolm Brogdon against his old team. So maybe if you're all right with that, Tony, if we start there, how has Malcolm Brogdon looked in these first, 11 games as a Pacer? What are surprises, disappointments? What have you seen from him?
Even I was like, I'm into Malcolm Brogdon's game in general last year, like how he was with the Bucks, but I kind of imagined him just kind of being that player just with a little bit more of the ball as a point guard. But, I've just been so surprised by how he's played this year. So at Media Day, I asked him straight up, like, is this an easy transition for you? And he's like, yeah, I'm better as a point guard. I'm more comfortable doing that. And he, you know, he always says it's because of his IQ and all this stuff, but like, there's very little NBA evidence. I mean, I guess his rookie year kind of, but not so much of him just like, yes, I can take the ball up every time and initiate all the offense and stuff like that. But he has been tremendous at it this year. He is getting to his spots. He's getting to the basket even. He's setting guys up. He's easily the team's leader in assists. Like, he is four more than the second highest guy. And he's still scoring 21 points a game. His points and assist averages are only being matched by Luka and LeBron this year. Like, That's Malcolm Brogdon we're talking about. Like,
it's Bucks impressive.
People should know that. Yeah, Bucks people should know that. Like, that doesn't seem like his game, and I don't know how necessarily sustainable his numbers are. But his shooting isn't actually that good. He's at 47, 33, and absurd free throws right now. So maybe they can get better, maybe not, because he's obviously taking different shots and has different usage this year. But he's just been so much more complete as a point guard than I ever thought he'd be, based on how he's played before.
Yeah, I mean, the major issue, I think, from a philosophy standpoint is his position. And I think that played a lot, a big role in as far as him not returning to Milwaukee and to the Bucks, because according to Cleaning the Glass, he spent 2/3 of his time at shooting guard last year. And the Bucks were a lot better when he was at shooting guard compared to when he was at point guard. I mean, they were good in both situations, but according to Cleaning the Glass, they were in the 95th percentile among point differential. And I'm just looking at that now, and even though he's spending more of his time at point guard with the Pacers this year, the numbers say that they're a lot better when he's at shooting guard compared to point guard. I mean, those are kind of the advanced numbers. It's early, but yeah, he's been killing it as far as with having the rock in his hands. I mean, his role in Milwaukee was really just a complimentary one, where it's really that
right.
Equal share offense. When the ball gets to him, he would have his chance. But this year, especially without Oladipo early on, the offense has ran through him. His usage has shot is crazy, and he's lost a little bit of his efficiency, but that's going to happen to anybody. He's still crazy efficient, still doing, playing really well, finding his teammates. One of the knocks against him was that he dribbled too much in Milwaukee. Have you noticed that? Has that come up in Indiana, or is it not an issue because that's his role? That's what they want him to do.
You know, so TJ McConnell is who I'm going to open my answer with. He has been awesome these last couple games, but in the first maybe four or five, he had some possessions where he just dribbled around it like a tornado for a solid 10 seconds, and it drove me crazy that he was dribbling so much. And so I think comparatively, I've never thought Brogdon was dribbling too much. He does have an occasional drive where, like, there's no shot for him, and he'll just kind of whiz it over to the other wing and not really pass or set something up. But it's very infrequent. I don't think it happens so often that it necessarily bugs me. But I do think, you know, every once in a while he'll have a drive or a situation where he dribbles without necessarily, like, an end game obvious plan. And that, you know, I think a lot of players are guilty of that. But he, you know, as he transitions to point guard, it's going to happen every once in a while.
Yeah, and it seems like he has a really good two-man game going with Sabonis.
Oh, my gosh. Ridiculous.
Like, especially as the clock is winding down, that kind of seems like the go-to where Sabonis will come and set that high pick and roll at the top of the key, and they can really go to work with one another. Have they already developed a chemistry, or like a good look with one another?
Yeah, they both, I'm sure you heard him say this last year, they both always talk about how they work so well together because they're both high IQ players, and I think that's pretty obvious. You know, they just, like, it took a few feeler games, like every new roster would, but, like, I feel like they both just know where the other guy's going to be, or, like, if he's going to surprise the defense and pop instead of roll, or short roll instead, or, you know, whatever. Like, they just know. It's almost telepathy already, and it's only been 10 games. And I don't want to talk it up too much because, you know, it's Malcolm Brogdon and Sabonis. This isn't, like, the deadliest pick-and-roll combo of all time, but it's been very good. Brogdon has 22 assists straight up to Sabonis this year. That's the second most he has to a specific player, and he has 9 assists from Sabonis, which is the most he has from another player. So they clearly link up quite a lot, and a lot of that's, you know, they play a lot together. But on Sabonis' side, it's a similar story. So the most of his assists have come from Brogdon. So I think it's very interesting how quickly they've connected and shown a two-man game, and I don't see that going away. I think they just have this IQ telepathy that works well together.
Yeah, that's definitely something that jumped out when I was watching Brogdon. And this is kind of related to Brogdon, but also the Pacers as a whole, is Brogdon is taking a ton of mid-range jump shots, which Bucks, you know, they've really cut that out under Mike Budenholzer, but he's really, you know, he's maybe okay at that mid-range shot in the past, but never even really sought it out too much, especially last year. He really went with the flow, but this year he loves that mid-range shot, and so do the Pacers as a whole. Is that more of like a Brogdon thing from the mid-range, or is that just part of their game plan? You know, is that what they do? They want those mid-range shots? How does that look like for the Pacers?
McMillan's always been more okay with them than other coaches and teams. He is more of a, his philosophy's always been more of, the open shot is better than, like, the efficient shot necessarily. And the Pacers are pretty good at generating open shots. It's just a lot of their efficiency does have a ceiling cap when they take as many mid-rangers as they do, because they do take near the top or the top of the league. It's usually them and the Spurs. I think it's 3 years running of those two teams being close to the top. And Brogdon is another guy who is doing that. He's taking almost a quarter of his shots from 16 feet to the three-point line. It's the second most on the team. Ironically, Goga is the highest, but he's only played 6 games. The shot that has Brogdon taking so many mid-rangers is it'll be early in the set, and he'll come around a screen from Sabonis, and he'll stop at about 18 feet if no one, you know, if they both cover Sabonis on the roll, and he's not afraid to just immediately shoot it. And he's hitting a lot of them. He's almost at 50% from that distance, but it's just you want, you know, every analytics person, especially Bucks fans in general, understand the cap you get shooting efficiency-wise from that distance. Now, again, if he's making them at the rate he's making them, it's fine. It's just a big change for him to see him take that shot all the time.
Yeah, and that'll be open all day against the Bucks. I mean, that's
a shot. Last year, the Bucks just said, you know what, Vic? If you're going to pull up at the elbow, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because Brogdon, I mean, the Pacers know Milwaukee well, obviously, too, but and Brogdon knows exactly what he can get against Budenholzer in this defense.
So I'm gonna chime in here now.
For sure.
And do some, we're going to make this a Bucksier segment. So now the Middleton is hurt. He's not playing in this game. He's out for a long time. And the suddenly surfaced debate on Twitter of Brogdon Middleton exists, which is ridiculous. Chris Middleton is better. But it did. You know, I wonder, and I'm asking you, what is the sentiment around the Bucks now that Middleton is out? Like, yes, he's better than Brogdon, but do they miss Brogdon more, or do they feel like if he had stayed, he'd still be the same player he was? And the reason he's producing at the level he is because of his new role.
Yeah, I think that the first part about missing Brogdon, I think if Middleton were ever to get hurt and to miss a month of the season, this would be the perfect time because the Bucks' schedule is so soft and so weak over the next 4 weeks.
What are you saying about the Pacers, man?
Well, I mean, even with it being so soft, Pacers are one of the few teams that are – it wasn't a knock against the Pacers. They're one of the – like maybe only two or three teams with a winning record over this next month that the Bucks play. I just made that number up, but I know it's a really low number. But other than that, it's a bunch of losing teams. And so it's kind of like if there's ever a time for an injury like this to happen, this might be it because Milwaukee, they have depth. You know, they have a bunch of players with different skill sets and a bunch of young guys, too, who maybe have some potential. And so this is kind of their time to shine. This is their time to, you know, prove that they're ready for a bigger role. Sterling Brown, who I expect to jump into the starting lineup, he didn't play for the first handful of games. He got an opportunity. He's been playing well over these last couple. And so he might be in line. You know, they have Pat Connaughton. They have Dante DiVincenzo, their first round pick. Yeah, so they have a bunch of just guys that could potentially slide in there. I mean, obviously, they're no Chris Middleton, but it'll be interesting to see how that works out because these guys know Budenholzer is going to play the hot hand, and so if they're playing well, they're going to get playing time. If they're not, they're going to be on the bench, and so this is their time to shine, and they're hungry. They want that opportunity to be a part of a potential championship team, and so that'll be interesting with Middleton how that all plays out. As far as Brogdon goes, I mean, I think it's comparing apples to oranges for what he's doing with Indiana to what he did with Milwaukee would be doing with Milwaukee, because he would not be this ball dominant guard like he is with the Pacers. He wouldn't be that if he stayed in Milwaukee. So his numbers would probably be pretty similar to last year, which like it's fine. He was great in his role last year. He's great in his role with Indiana this year. And so I think Bucks fans are split on that. But I think, you know, from my perspective, like I'm happy for Brogdon. Like this is what he wanted. He said he wanted the ball in his hands. He's proving that he was right. You know, he bet on himself and he's been right. You know, it's a small sample size, but it couldn't have gone any better to start. So I think, you know, he's in a great role for himself. The Bucks, they still have depth. They still have guys. I mean, obviously Brogdon would be the best option out of Sterling Brown, Pat Connaughton, DiVincenzo. Brogdon would be a way better player to step up if he were still in Milwaukee, but the Bucks, they'll be fine. I mean, Giannis, I think he'll be able to do even more. Eric Bledsoe has been playing well. You know, they have guys that can come and fill that void early in the season and against this schedule. You know, if it was in the postseason, that'd be a whole different story. If it was against a whole slate of tough competition, whole different story. But against what they have coming up, I think that, you know, this is kind of a time for them to experiment and see for sure what they got in some of these young players. Because Brown, he'll be a restricted free agent next year. Pat Connaughton, he'll be an unrestricted free agent next year. And they're probably unlikely to be able to pay up and keep both of them. You know, they're both on really cheap contracts. So this might give them some insight too about who they want to keep or if they even want to keep one of those guys.
Yeah, I really liked Pat Connaughton there. I hope he thrives if he gets an expander. I don't know why I think he's like, he's not like so good, but I think he's clearly a solid role player. I think it's funny you said Giannis can do more because I think he clearly can. He's not even playing that many minutes. He's at like 33. Mm-hmm. But it's just so funny to look at the guy averaging 30, 14, and 7 and be like, yeah, he could step up a little bit. You know? I was doing some research. I said this on my podcast already, so my listeners are getting a duplicate stat here. So Sabonis is averaging, at the time of recording this, 20, 13, and 4, okay? So I looked up that stat line to see when the last time it happened was, and it was 2005 Kevin Garnett. But the other person doing it right now is Giannis, and so it doesn't even matter because two guys are doing it at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, Giannis, he's just crazy. He's talked about being at 60% of his potential.
My God.
That was kind of his line in the offseason, is that he still wants to get better. And even though his shooting is maybe making tiny improvements, we've seen in other areas of his game, you know, his playmaking, his vision and his passing, that's really, I think, where we've seen that leap this year. And it's still not even perfect. A lot of times, like, he's getting to the point now where he can make the correct read most of the time, but his passes aren't always accurate and on time. And, you know, that's what really separates like LeBron from others, is it's not just the court vision, but it's the passing accuracy and the timeliness. And Giannis, he's still a bit wild with some of his passes. And I think, you know, he's 24 years old, so that will still, you know, mature and he'll grow into that. But I think, you know, it's not like players just take huge leaps year after year, especially when they get to this stage. It's these right. small changes and these constant changes that really then separate them from great into elite.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing him against the Pacers. I've caught a few Bucks games, but obviously, you know, you and I both pay more attention to the games of the teams that we cover. Mm-hmm. But I'm mostly interested in this game to see who the Pacers put on Giannis to guard him, because Thad Young, who Giannis himself mentioned last year is one of like the best guys at stopping him, is gone.
Yep.
And I have no idea who's going to cover him in this game. It's very interesting to me.
It would have to be one of Sabonis or Turner, right?
I agree. I think it's going to be Sabonis. If I had to put a number on it, I'd be like 70% sure it'd be Sabonis. But I don't know. You know, you just never know. Like TJ Warren is kind of tall, mm-hmm, so maybe, yeah. But he's kind of weak. And Turner, you kind of went around the basket, but like Giannis isn't really a super good threat away from the rim, but at the same time, he can get ahead of steam going to the bat. I don't know. I just have no idea.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it will depend on who the Bucks slide into that starting lineup too. If they go with Sterling Brown, that would impact, but I think there's also an outside chance Milwaukee could go big. They could put Giannis at the three inside, someone like Ersan or DJ Wilson in as a starting four. And so then I think then they could or might be more likely to go with somebody like Warren or something like that. So I think part of it will depend too on, you know, who the Bucks slide in their starting lineup. And I mean, the Bucks will play Thursday night against the Bulls, so we'll already know probably who that is before the Pacers and the Bucks play.
Yeah. DJ Wilson, the back-to-back DJ Wilson, TJ Leaf picks are not the making the Pacers and Bucks fans the happiest, that's for sure.
So as far as I heard you mention before, so I just wanted to kind of capture this point, or not capture, but just talk about it a little bit. There was that debate going on about Middleton versus Brogdon.
Stupid debate. Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, from my point of view, like, I think Middleton is better, but like at this point, I'm like, I don't really care to argue it. Like, I just, why can't we be happy for both players? Like, they're both thriving. They're both playing very well. And like, let's just be happy for both. Maybe a younger, more immature version of me would be all into this. but like, it's like they both are in great situations, and like that's all you can ask for, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, I think the gap is way smaller than I thought before the season started, but like the one who mm-hmm. was an all-star last year and is still very good is the better player to me. Mm-hmm. I love Chris Middleton so much. I think he's so good. I wanted him. I think he would have been a great fit next to Vic if he was ever available, but mm-hmm. Money talks, so that did not happen. Are we blaming Snotty for starting that debate? That's the first guy.
I think he kind of, you know, poke the flames, but or stoke the flames, but I've seen it pop up in other places too, and
I got another guy that we got to talk about.
Yeah,
how are the Bucks liking Wesley Matthews, former Pacer?
He's had an interesting start. I think that if you just look at like his basic numbers, they aren't the friendliest to him, but I've been impressed with, you know, he's a veteran leader, his defense. He is typically in the right spot at the right time. He knows, you know, what's expected of him, and he's taken on some pretty good challenges. Like he did okay against James Harden, or like at least okay as you can against someone like James Harden. So I think his defense has been there, but for most like casual fans, I would guess that, you know, they're not too impressed with him. His 3-point shooting, you know, he's been in a slump, shooting worse than he ever has at any point in his career. And that really just jumps off the page, especially when Brogdon is putting up these numbers. You know, Wesley Matthews isn't necessarily a Brogdon replacement. He's more of like a Tony Snell replacement, but it's hard not to compare those two players. So I think it's been a slow start, but he has that Wisconsin background, you know, he went to school, high school in Madison, college at Marquette. And so I think fans are willing to stick in there with him, but it hasn't been the best start by most accounts.
Yeah, his 3-point percentage is not looking super great. Does he still do the archery thing for you guys, right?
He does, yep.
Yes, that is my favorite thing about Wesley Matthews. You kind of nailed how he was in Indiana. He was actually, a pretty solid three-point shooter here. He was like the only guy Nate McMillan would just let chuck no matter what. Because he you know, he has the same move every time. You guys have seen it for whatever, 11 games now. The one dribble to the right, jump behind the line three is like his move. But he makes it like about league average on a decent volume. He's not this year, but that's a useful player when he's as good as D is. Like you said, he can not great, but he can capably lock up good ball handlers. And yeah, I liked Wesley Matthews quite a bit when he was here. I thought he was a good 3-and-D guy that every team could use. But I'm sad that the casual fans don't enjoy the Wesley Matthews experience.
I think they'll come around. I mean, he's shown throughout his career that he is going to be an above-average three-point shooter, and I don't think it will drastically change this much. You know, it's a small sample size. Right. It's only been 10 games.
Well, and he'll break out of it with like an 8-for-9 game in Indiana or something like that.
Saturday night.
Yeah. The revenge game. I don't think there's any will. It's just funny.
Yeah, and his role is a lot different with Milwaukee. I mean, he's that fifth starter behind Bledsoe, behind Middleton, behind
Giannis. Right. Is he just in the corner a lot, kind of?
Yeah. You know, his usage is way down. He just basically is there to space the floor, and if his guy helps, catch and shoot. You know, he's not asked to do a lot of that shot creation, really hardly any shot creation, no matter who he's on the court with. So he's just really that fifth guy that is supposed to be able to make opponents pay when they build the wall against Giannis or whatever you want to call it, kind of that defense that the Raptors showed in the Eastern Conference Finals. He's supposed to be out there that can help, you know, make guys pay. And a lot of it is just his willingness to shoot it. You know, a lot of the talk right now is about like the gravity that each player has. I think it was Seth Partnow, or I'm guessing it was him, but he said it's not necessarily the gravity that a player has, it's a gravity that a player is given by the defense. And part of that is your willingness perception to shoot from the outside. Yeah. Perception. Yeah. And somebody like Brogdon, who only took maybe 4 threes a game in Milwaukee, compared to somebody like Matthews, who will take 8 or 9 in those same situations, you know, that plays into it, even if he's not hitting as many. And so I think just that willingness to shoot from the outside is helpful for him, and his percentages will come around, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I would also guess that. All right, I'm putting you on the spot for one tough game preview-y question.
I'm ready.
What is the Bucks' biggest weakness this season?
Ooh, biggest weakness. Like, specifically related to the Pacers or just in general?
No. Just in, like, the thing that is plaguing the Bucks the most, and I guess in theory that the Pacers could also exploit, but I'm just talking in general, what is plaguing the Bucks this year?
Oh,
because their statistical profile, their shot profile, all looks very good. So there's got to be a way to puncture through this team somewhere, right?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that just jumps out to me is maybe their reliance on threes, on too many threes. They're not getting to the hoop as nearly as often this year. Part of that, because Brogdon, you know, he had a lot of drives, he had a lot of shots around the hoop. He's gone, and so that really leaves it with Bledsoe, and Giannis is really the only two guys who can get to the hoop on a consistent basis. I say that, and defenses are really locked in on, all right, like we're willing to give up threes as long as Bledsoe and Giannis aren't getting to the hoop, you know, because they finish at such a high level. And so when that happens, you know, you're not going to just keep pounding it into three or four defenders. You're going to have to kick it out. And those guys have been open and they've been shooting and they've gone through a lot of cold streaks. You know, two of the losses that the Bucks have suffered, they've been up huge. We're talking 20 points in the second halves of game against Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. All of a sudden they went cold, couldn't make any threes. They couldn't get to the rim. They kept chucking threes, and then their defense suffered as a result as well. And so I think that's the thing is, and I think it's just forcing them to shoot from the outside and hope that their guys aren't going to make it. And then you take advantage of that. You get the defensive rebound and you run with it if you're the opponent. So I think that's been their biggest weakness so far, is that sometimes they just rely on that 3-point shot and they don't have a guy who can get a bucket when they're going through a slump outside of Giannis and Bledsoe, especially with Middleton out right now.
Live and die by the three, right? That's what they say.
Yeah. I mean, the analytics, you know, it's not an awful shot, but when you aren't hitting it for, I mean, what we've seen is like quarter stretches of quarters at a time. That's difficult to do.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still about like league average, a little bit below from the 3-point line, but they've just, yeah, when you hit 8 out of 10 or 8 out of 12 shots, whatever, then that number is going to regress to the mean as well.
There you go. I think the Pacers will try to contest those threes and keep them off, but who knows? It's very tough when you have a guy like Giannis who can literally create any shot on any possession.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it takes more than one guy to shut him down, usually three or four guys, and then that's how it works out.
We always on this show bring up the phony strategy that's not actually like a real thing you can do of just like, yeah, just like let Giannis do his thing and stop everybody else. But like if you let Giannis do his thing, he'll have like 50 and 20 and then you lose anyway.
Yeah, I think with him, I mean, there's not much of a variation when you're shooting at the rim and dunking the ball all the time. So,
right. Yeah, there's a reason he's shooting 66% from 2-point range.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a nuts stat.
So what is your prediction for the game on Saturday night? Well, how do you think that it plays out? You know, being in Indiana, they'll have the advantage there. Saturday night, I'm guessing it'll be a lit crowd. They'll be excited. What are your predictions?
Yeah, the Pacers have put together decent game plans to defend Giannis in the past, but a lot of that, like I said earlier, was kind of reliant on having Thaddeus Young. So I think that, you know, even if they're hyped up to, you know, this is the best team in their division, one of the best teams in the league, in the conference, it's just going to be hard to stop him, right? And this team, the Pacers this year, one of their problems is that they foul a ton. They're like 25th in the league in fouls, and almost all that's coming from their big men. And I just feel like if that happens, you know, their big man rotation gets thrown off and Giannis is having an incredible game, they just have no way of getting into enough rhythm to score enough points to win this game. So I think they can, you know, especially with Middleton out, be capable of keeping up in terms of overall impact in the backcourt and maybe even on the wing. But I think Giannis is just so good, and the Pacers don't have a good enough matchup for him that the Pacers don't have a great shot of winning.
So you're saying they're going to lose?
Yeah, if you made me you actually predicted every game of this week, and I did in fact predict the Bucks would win this game.
Cool. Yeah, I could see it going either way. I mean, the Pacers are going to be on the second night of a back-to-back, so I think that'll help a little bit.
Oh, but wait, what if I told you they played James Harden the night before?
Is that good or bad?
Brutal back-to-back for their defense.
Yeah, it'll be tough, and they're coming from Houston too, so it's not like they'll be Indiana, you know, that they'll probably be depending on how late the game goes, they probably won't get back to Indiana till early.
I think their
the
only
morning.
Chance is like that game they had last year where, what did Giannis have, like 14 or something, 16 12? They have to have that game again to win, and the only reason he only had 12 is because he only shot six times. That's mm-hmm. the only chance they have, and I don't think they have a way that they can do that again this time.
Yeah, well, and the Pacers, they played Milwaukee tough. I think there's another game where they had Milwaukee on the ropes going into the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's the same one. And the Bucks had to...
That was February, but yes, I remember that game very well. That was in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and the Bucks, you know they're on the ropes when Budenholzer goes to their switching defense. You know, he likes to stay in that drop pick and roll coverage, but you know he's really worried when he goes to that switching defense. And I remember last year, I want to say, and I'm just... If you have it up in front of you, let me know. But I think the Pacers had a double-digit lead going into the fourth quarter, and then the Bucks.
I'll open it and look, but I don't remember.
Okay, and then the Bucks went into their switching defense and were able to come all the way back and win, I think, by like 6 or 8 or something like that. So Pacers, they play tough. I think that young
Pacers were up by 3 going into the fourth.
Oh, wow.
Smacked around in the fourth. They only scored 18 points in the fourth quarter.
Okay, so I guess I was partially right, but mostly wrong.
You had the game flow right. Like, I wonder if they were up big at the beginning of the fourth too or something. Like, I can only see the breakdown by quarter right now.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think the Pacers always played them tough, so I could see us going either way. But I think, you know, the Bucks will be the most well-rested team. It'll only be their second game in 6 days because they last played on Sunday. They'll have a game Thursday night. But yeah, I just don't see anyone who can guard Giannis, even without Middleton there. There's just nobody on the Pacers roster that can slow down Giannis. And if they, you know, throw out a team effort in there, the Bucks shooter should be open, and they'll have the fresher legs and hopefully be able to knock him down. So I'm going to go with a homer take. And
I don't call that a homer take. Okay, you were right, though. I'm on the box score as I'm listening to you. So it was 79-76 going into the fourth, and then the Pacers got it to 86-76. So there's your 10-point lead.
All right, okay.
With 9.5 minutes left, and then the Bucks just roared back.
Perfect. So I kind of redeemed myself there, right?
You did. You 100% redeemed yourself. So add the 10-point game. Brooke Lopez came into the game, and Chris Middleton came into the game. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Those guys sparked the run.
Nice. All right. Anything else that you wanted to cover before we wrap this up?
Not really. I'm looking forward to this one. It's the best team the Pacers will have played this year, including the Rockets. Sorry, Rockets people. So I'm just looking forward, because their schedule's been pretty weak, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they do against really stellar competition.
Awesome. Yeah, and you can find Tony on Twitter at TEastNBA, and I'm Brian Sampson. You can find me on Twitter at BucksFilmRoom.